everything happens when it's purposed to. That's been my motto for everything happens when it's purposed to, not supposed to. Purpose
too. Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Shayna Danielle is a remarkable, inspirational spoken word artist, author, and entrepreneur. She uses powerful imagery to encourage people to become the best version of themselves. In 2020, Shayna published her first book, Rise, a collection of inspiring poetry and essays. And in 2021, her six-year-old daughter, Maya, published her first book, I Love Myself, a coloring book of affirmations designed to encourage and uplift young people. Shayna is passionate about helping others through her inspirational poetry as she ignites their desire to overcome challenges and live their best life. Okay, and I'm here with Shayna Danielle.
Yes.
Okay, and I'm so happy to have her because I just finished your book. It's an amazing book. I really enjoyed it. Very inspirational, very authentic, very open with your... And you are an artist, author, and entrepreneur.
Yes.
You have a beautiful family also. I feel like adorable kids and happy family. So tell us, Shayna, can you kind of give us a little bit about your background as far as how you got into writing, what motivated you to begin writing, and how this book kind of came into existence?
Okay. So I started writing when I was in the seventh grade. I had a teacher, and her name was Mrs. Sano, and she introduced us to creative writing. So she was more about like onomatopoeia, which is like, you know, the sound descriptions. And she introduced us to poetry like Langston Hughes and Maya Angelou. And even with some like other genres that I don't necessarily do, like with horror and things like that, but like just being really descriptive and adjectives, you know, to help bring the reader into, you know, what you're talking about. And that was when I was like, I think I really like this. So, of course, that's where like my love for poetry began. And I wrote the poem. It was like a version of it called like the On the Rise poem. I wrote like a shorter like version of it in seventh grade. And they were like, oh, wow, this is really, really, really good. And I was able to win like talent shows and things with it. Yeah. So that is what like helped me with my love for writing. You know, the writing, for me, I learned that it wasn't just healing for me. As I began to share my writings with other people, I learned that it was healing for them as well. And they were able to relate. And I was like, oh, wow. They're like, they was like encouraging, like, you know, you should keep writing and keep sharing and stuff like that. So probably about 7 years ago, it was like, okay, I want to actually put my writings together and I want to create the book. But then life happened and I was, you know, going through all kind of like turbulence. It like, you know, I got maybe a little bit discouraged. So I had to like help and heal myself a little bit more and build up myself to, you know, be able to share it with the world and put it out there in the public. And now here we are, 2020 happened. I had a baby, was going through some more life turbulence. And the Lord was like, nope. Nope, we're not going there. It's time to rise. And right. You got rise.
I love that because when you wrote a poem in seventh grade called Rise. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
And look what it's turned into, like however many years later. That's just, that's a wonderful story because you never know when you write something, when it will actually, or how it will manifest into something. So you can write something at 5 years old
Mm-hmm. And have it turn into something when you're 25. You wrote something when you were in seventh grade. And you had,
so like a lot of rise, girl, look at this. It came out of
Oh my God. Is that like your book?
So I got like all kind of like, it's just falling apart now, you know? Girl, I love it. So long ago. But like, I have like a lot of poems and I have like a lot of books like this.
Yes. I love Shayna. I was just looking at a diary that I kept in fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Our teacher made us keep a diary in fifth grade. And it was so funny to go back and read. I wanted to read my entry from New Year's Day in 1990, blah, blah, blah. And it said, I wrote nothing. We did nothing today. It was the worst New Year's ever. But it's just so interesting to like go back. And so that's beautiful how you have that book falling apart. It's just wonderful. So tell us a little bit about how was it difficult to share your writing with people in the beginning, or was that always easy for you?
So I'm going to say it was always easy for me in a sense when it came time to share something that wasn't necessarily about me. Like mm-hmm. some of the poems are directly about me. Mm-hmm. And they're a little bit more to heart, like more hard to share, like Black is Beautiful. Mm-hmm. But if it's something like The Fall, that was like a story of someone else and like, you know, their drug addiction issues and things like that, that's a lot more easier for me to share because I'm not as vulnerable, which I talk about in the book as well.
Right.
So when I was little, like 3, 4, my dad, like for the church plays for Easter, Christmas, he would have me take on the most difficult, like, poems possible. Like, where other kids would have, like, little 5 words or 6 words or something like that, my dad would be like, oh, no, you're getting this long one. And then he would, like, I called him, he would be on his Joe Jackson stuff. He would make me, like, stand up against the wall and slow down, enunciate your words. And, you know, it was really, really irritating for me then. However, now, you know, I love it, and it helped me, you know, so much as a person.
yeah, that's great, because I think a lot of people, they write, but they're so scary to share, even when it's not necessarily about them. Like if they're writing fiction, mm-hmm. sometimes they're scared to write fiction because they're scared of what people are going to think. They're scared of people's judgments of you can't write, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
Did you ever go through that where you doubted or you were scared of what people would say about your writing?
Yes, and I'm going to say that's one of the reasons which took me longer, like during that 7-year process where like I wanted to come out with the book, but I had life issues. But then the other thing was, is like, okay, once I put this out there, it's out there and it's open for criticism. And are people going to like it or are they not going to like it? And then that's where I got to a place of, you know, it's 8 billion people on this world. Like, so the people that it's meant to help, and there's going to be people that like it, but I can't appeal to everybody. My book is not going to appeal to the person that liked to go deer hunting. My book is not going to appeal to the person that liked, you know, NASCAR. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But for the person who may be going through something, this is for them. And I think that on this process, I learned to like get over myself and my fears and my insecurities about what others were going to say. And, just put it out there, you know? Mm-hmm. And for anybody that may be on their first book or their second book, and it's like, oh man, I don't know if people are going to like this, or, oh man, I don't know. Even if it's like, you're writing horror and you want to give your book to the people who like horror, they're like, oh my gosh, this book is garbage. Right. Okay, well, what did you learn from that? What did they say wasn't good? And then that can help you get better with the next one. When you think about these models and things that you see on TV or the actors or things like that, do you know how many times they got told no? Like, oh no, you're not good enough. Oh no, you're not a fit for here. Okay, I might not be a fit here, but those 20 no's, all you need is one yes. And I got to the place on the writing journey this year where no is the next best thing to a yes. I tried.
Right.
Exactly. So yeah. I say no, it's the next best thing to a yes. Like,
yeah. Each little roadblock is leading to the big reveal.
Yes, and you learn something, you know?
You do, yeah.
So I went through the editing process, and a lot of people, they hate the editing process, and, you know, they're critiquing or they're saying, oh, well, maybe you might not want to word it like this. Maybe you might want to think about this. And it's about not taking things personal, you know, like a lot of people, and we're not going to get onto my personal feelings about it, but people will talk about, you know, with Donald Trump, let's say. And so with Donald Trump, you know, he don't really care what nobody think about him. You know,
exactly.
I'm not saying aspire to necessarily be exactly like him and the things that he think and say, but just that attitude of,
right.
you know, I'm going to live my best life. This is right. my best life. This is my world. This is my block. This is my mansion. If I'm not in a mansion, this because the paperwork ain't caught up yet. Like, this is me. This is mine.
Yeah.
And just getting to the attitude of living fearlessly, but with so fearless. How can we talk about that? I feel as though that in life there's a good amount of fear, but I feel as though that sometimes fear can be debilitating. So like, let's say you're somebody who's scared to drive your car, you know, okay, I'm scared to drive my car because I'm going to get into an accident, but I'm going to put my seatbelt on and go to the grocery store because we need some food. Or am I going to be the person that never ever gets into a car ever because I'm so terrified, and now the fear is hindering you from getting where you need to go. You know, so the writing journey, as far as putting the book together, it helped me get over some of my fears. Even having this, you know, interview with you, this is something that 2 years ago I might not have been ready to do. And I'm the person that would have loved to talk to people and all this other kind of, you know, things, but to put myself out there on like the internet and social media and things like that, now you're opening yourself up to a different type of criticism, and it can be a little, you know, a little scary.
Yeah.
But if you really want to accomplish things and you really want to, you know, achieve whatever it is you're trying to achieve, and for me, that's to impact people on a global level, I got to put myself out there. If I didn't put myself out there, my book wouldn't be in the UK right now. Like, my book made it to the UK. Like, I wouldn't be, I wouldn't be in the UK. You get what I'm saying? If I just would have been like, well, I'm just going to share it with the few people that I know who are going to like it.
Right.
Then, you know, it's this writing.
It's like, it's stepping out of your comfort zone. It was really what it is. And there's this this author, I always talk about her with almost every guest that comes on her, Byron Katie. She has this book called, I can't remember the name of the book. But she, her theory is that we spend so much time in other people's heads instead of staying in our own heads. And when we try to go into other people's heads, we're in their business, we're trying to be in their business, and we're not minding our own business. We're abandoning ourselves to try and figure out what someone else is thinking, and we can never know exactly what someone else is thinking.
Yes.
We're really just making up all these stories about what we think they're saying about us. And so once we learn to really like stick with ourselves, like mind our own business and stay out of other people's business, then you can begin to flourish.
Yes. And so for that, I could say, you know, we can sometimes be the best horror writers ever. Like, we could give, you know, Steven Spielberg a run for his money with some of the scenarios we create in our head. You know, like, let's say we're driving and we get a flat tire. It's like, oh my gosh, I got a flat tire. Oh my gosh, I want to be late for work. Oh my gosh, they're going to fire me. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be homeless. Oh my gosh, my kids are going to go into diapers. Oh my, like, we just run into all of these things. How about we get the flat tire and it's like, oh my goodness, this flat tire prevented me from getting into an accident. Like, why we can't spend things for our good? We'll see somebody and we'll see them maybe like make a, like a scowl, like, and maybe they're just having a bad day, but because we're in our own heads and we're trying to put on what they are trying to say about us, like, oh, well, maybe it's just they don't like me. Well, maybe it's not about you. Maybe it's about them, you know? Maybe it's like, oh, I'm here to help them have a great day. They're like this. Let me smile and wave. Hey, how you doing?
And
then you never know how that conversation is going to go. So I completely agree with, get out of other folks' heads. Stay in your own head. Mind your business.
Exactly. Yes. Life will run a little smoother for you if you can really just learn to stay in your lane. Let's talk a little bit about like the turbulence. So, because this is kind of I think it's really interesting how you mentioned the tire example, because you can have, like you said, the flat tire. And for some people, that would just be a complete upset. And, you know, some people might want to just lay down and die if they have a flat tire. Or you can take that flat tire and you can change the narrative from I am a victim of this flat tire to this has saved me from this accident or whatever. And so when you look back at your life, because you write about some heavy stuff. Was it difficult to write about some of your past, your stories, or were you always of the mindset that this can potentially help someone else, or I'm going to make something completely positive out of something that some people would see as a complete negative?
So it shifted to that. But in the beginning, no, I was terrified. It's like, you know, you get brought up of you're not supposed to let anyone inside. You're supposed to keep this, you know, brick wall. And if you let anybody inside, they're going to use it against you and all of this kind of things. And, you know, just don't share anything with anyone or they're going to hurt you and they're going to use. And so, you know, hearing those things, you know, growing up, whether it was from family or whether it was from friends, as an adult now trying to put the book together, it was, a process for me to deal with me, you know, and in doing that, I was able to heal a lot and let go of things. And now that I have let go of them personally, now I can share, you know, with others. And then once you get to a place where you're able to let things go, let's say somebody does bring it up and try to use it against me. I don't already like let it go. Like I've already moved past it. I've already healed in that area. So, you know, if someone, oh my gosh, you had a marriage that didn't work. Okay. And I didn't heal and I forgave and I didn't move on. you get what I'm saying?
So did like 89% of the population have marriages.
you said that to say what? But in the beginning, you know, just anything when you're sharing something that's a little bit more personal or private and, you know, letting people in, it can be a little scary at first. But in this process, once you heal and you forgive, it is what it is, you know?
Yeah. And I love that idea of writing to heal, because I had a professor in college who would always say you can write your way through a problem, write your way out of the problem. And as you, I think you mentioned before, writing is very therapeutic. And that's why I love that you have the journals, because I think as a young child, you learned that. And that's just a wonderful skill to pick up at such a young age. Because a lot of stuff that we go through, we tend to just hold in our bodies and it begins to manifest as diseases and stress. And if you can learn how to proactively and process some of these feelings through writing is a big one, and exercise and stuff like that, your life will be a little bit easier. At least you won't be carrying all that, you know, baggage in your body. Okay, so did you ever experience writer's block? And if you did, how did you manage it? I think there was one poem you mentioned that you were having difficulty.
So with writer's block, I feel as though that sometimes that's because I have like an area where maybe I need to heal at, in a sense. And in my book, Voices, that's the last poem of the book, I didn't write for like 3 days. I didn't write for 3 days because I didn't know what or how to approach it. And some people feel as though that that's maybe one of the best poems in a book. That's what some people have said. And for me, it was a process, you know, and I had to really like dig deep and again, get over myself, get out of my head, stop overthinking. And just start writing, just start doing, you know, and life sometimes that's what we do, whether it's we want to start a podcast or we want to start a YouTube channel or we want to write our book. We overthink and we get caught up in the things we need to have. Oh, I need this laptop or I need this light or I need this camera that I don't even necessarily know how to work instead of working with what we have, which is sometimes a pen and a paper or our cell phone or whatever it is that we're used to and we're familiar with, and just start doing and stop thinking.
Right. Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah.
That's more, for me, that's writer's block. It's more of a not doing and more of a overthinking.
And I love how you said that you had to walk away from something for 3 days. You didn't
write. Yeah.
A lot of times that is necessary. You just have to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of just relax and observe life and let inspiration
come
through and then come
back
when you're ready. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, that's great. How did you, was there ever a moment when you felt like, I just completely want to give up and on this, it's just too hard, it's too stressful to write this book, or under too much pressure, or were you always pretty much like gung-ho?
So in 2020, once I started the process, it was, okay, I'm full steam ahead. I'm ready to go because I was ready now. But if you would have asked me in 2019 or 2018 to start and to put the book together and do it, I feel as though I would have maybe came up with excuses, or maybe came up with, I can't do this, because I was so consumed with, you know, life around me. Where for me, at this point in time, putting the book together, that was my escape from some other things that was going on around me. So at this point in time with writing, no, I never wanted to give up. I was like, yes, I'm ready. However, once the book was done, fully ready to go, and then, because I didn't want to start my pre-orders until my book was like, I had a fully like finished book in my hand. I didn't want to start pre-orders. Right. That was when it was the scary part. It was, do I really want to do this? Mm-hmm. Do I really want to press live? Do I really want to put this out there? And then when it came time for the book to go live in October, it was, do I really want to do this? Do I just want to refund these people's money? So that, yes, but the actual process of writing this year and wanting to give up, no, not because I was ready.
Yeah.
I was ready now.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's important for people to know that it's okay not to be ready. Like you'll be ready when you're ready. It's probably better just to wait and you know, write, wait, watch, just observe.
Yes. So everything happens when it's purposed to. That's been my motto, for everything happens when it's purposed to, not supposed to, purposed to. You know, I'm all about walking in our purpose and things like that. And like for me, like with my book, I have an audio book that I recorded back in July, but because of life, I never like got around to do the final mastering of it. So I'm working towards that now. So hopefully that could be done by the end of the month. But I could have been beating myself up about it because I wanted to release the audiobook with the book itself, you know? And then it turned into, well, no, let's get the book out there. Let's, you know, let people have the book. So then when an audiobook is available, they've already read it and they've already talked about it. Now they can actually hear you, you know, read it. So it was, like I said, everything happens when it's purposed to, you know, I want things, you know, right. And it's not that I'm not going to put it out there, but it's just, you know, a slight delay. But that's because I personally feel that whether it's the audiobook or whether it's a regular book that, you know, someone's on their writing journey with, and you set deadlines for yourself. And yes, deadlines are good, but you set deadlines for yourself. And then it's like, oh my gosh, life is over because I didn't meet my deadline. No, it's not over. Mm-hmm. It's just a slight delay, but it's still going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's important because this is why I was actually talking to a friend the other day, and he's like, I asked him, do you write down your goals for the new year? And he said, no, because I don't want there to be a record of my failure. And I said, you know, but it's okay if you don't meet a goal by a particular time. I mean, it's never too late to start.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so. I'm glad that you said that you mentioned about the deadlines and not meeting them, because don't beat yourself up if you don't meet a deadline. It's not the end of the world. Just set a new deadline, and
yeah,
you know, when you know better, you do better. Isn't that Maya Angelou too?
Yes. But when you do set deadlines for yourself, at least it gives you something to work towards. And when it's something brand new that you're venturing out on that you've never done before, starting a business, writing a book, YouTube channels, podcasts, anything like that, you know, when you set a deadline for yourself, you might come about something that you never knew that was part of the process, you know?
Right.
So now when you are ready to start something else the next time, now you can have a more accurate deadline. But deadlines keep us accountable with actually working towards it. But if it's not exactly ready on the deadline, it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Shayna, what's your favorite piece in the book? And then I want to ask you about a specific piece, but what's your favorite?
So in the books, when people ask me that, you know, favorites change. It's like, someone, oh, what's your favorite color? Or what's this? And, you know, sometimes they change based on what you're going through or where you're at. But at this point, I'm going to say that, let's go with right now, Barbie is my favorite.
I was gonna ask you about Barbie. Oh my goodness. Okay, that's one that really sticks out. Okay, so let's talk about Barbie. Where did the idea from, what chapter is that, by the way? Where is that?
Chapter two, I believe.
Chapter two.
Yeah, I believe it's chapter two. Okay. Yes, it is. Chapter two.
So how, while I'm finding this, what was the impetus for this? Or how did this poem kind of birth?
So with Barbie, it was more, so it seemed like, I guess at this point in time, like Instagram was like really becoming popular. Like I wrote this one years ago, you know, and Instagram was really popular. And it seemed like, you know, for girls, we had to, we couldn't become good or, you know, Instagram famous if you didn't like show yourself shaking your butt. And you know, Nicki Minaj was really popular at that point in time, and I felt as though that, you know, young girls are trying to aspire to be what they saw on the TV screen and things like that. But, you know, that's superficial, you know, that's not like where your true value is. And I wanted to change the narrative and help them realize that, you know, the beauty is, you know, within them. And then it was, as far as for the guys, when I first wrote this poem, it was a little bit more vulgar, but I wanted to change it because I wanted this to be able to be in schools and things like that. So I removed some of the things, like in one of it where I talk about how dying chick, fly chick, ride or die chick. It was dying bee, fly bee, ride or die bee, because that's what it seemed like. I would hear a girl say, well, I'm a dying bee, I'm a fly bee. I'm this. Well, you still calling yourself a B word. Like, how is that like, okay? Like, you're a queen, you know, you're a royalty. You are wonderful. You're amazing. Like, why do you have to be a B, a female dog? Like, why do you have to be that, you know? And it was like society was trying to push like that was cool. And that was what you needed to be. And I wanted to change the narrative. So.
Right. Yeah. And I love Ken. Let's look, cause I'm looking at this. We need to change the mentality that our sexuality is only sensuality. Open up our eyes and come to the reality. You know, it's so, I am a high school teacher. And so I don't really see it as much on the campus where I'm teaching now, but I used to see a lot of young girls dress
mm-hmm.
a particular way.
Yes.
You knew that they were, you know, trying to get attention
mm-hmm.
from the wrong crowd.
Yes. And
I would often think how sad that they feel that this is the only way
mm-hmm.
they can get the attention that they want, and that they feel that their body, their physicality mm-hmm. is like their primary currency.
I know. Yeah. And so that's where Barbie came about, you know, because even me, like I went through some of those own thoughts, like where I was going back within myself. Like I know my value, I know my worth, but it's like, well, man, like if I would do this, then I could get more attention. But then it's the wrong attention. So it was more about one, centering myself back to yeah. where it needed to be, but then two, hoping to change the narrative for other young girls, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the domestic violence? Because that was, I'm sure that was tough to write about. Like how, when you were writing about it, did you re-experience it?
So for me, I had a minor level of domestic violence per se. Mine wasn't as graphic as what I wrote about. However, I had two best friends, very, very close friends of mine, and they were both placed into the hospital because of men that they were with in domestic violence situations, you know? So when I had my small taste of it, it took me back to seeing them in the hospital and the bruises and the, you know, things like that. And me like begging them not to be in those situations. And that's, you know, one of the reasons how I ended up leaving that situation I was in. But it was a little bit painful to write about, not necessarily for me reliving it itself, but being the hurt friend of, you know, my friend like crying and, you know, bruised up and I mean, broken, you know, bones and all just kind of, it was, you know, so I felt as though it was necessary to write and necessary to talk about because it's something that gets swept under the rug so much. And we think that, you know, we're just going to just sweep it, you know, and nobody deals with it. Nobody really talks about it openly and as graphic sometimes it can be. They may say, oh, abuse is no excuse, or, oh, you know, don't be in this. Well, if maybe somebody was in a small situation like mine, I need them to know it can grow to this level and you need to get yourself safe, you know?
Mm-hmm. What do you think is at the core of all of these issues that we're talking about, the core of women selling themselves in the wrong way, like selling their bodies, using their bodies to attract attention, staying in relationships that are abusive? Is it a self-love issue? Is it just an attention issue? What do you think is the core?
I personally feel as though it's a self-love issue, and nobody wants to admit that they do not love themselves correctly. You know, nobody wants to admit that. It's easier to play the blame game. Oh, this one this, oh, this one that, you know, oh, my mom this, or oh, my dad that, or oh, my cousins this. And while those things may come into a factor, at what point do you now take responsibility for yourself and loving yourself correctly? Before I met, you know, the man that I have married now, prior to meeting him, I was dating myself. I was going out, treating myself out to eat. I would go and watch a movie. I would go and get my hair done. I took a flight to the middle of nowhere, per se, Iowa. I flew to Des Moines, Iowa. I drove to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, drove to Omaha, Nebraska.
What was it, Iowa?
Yes. Des Moines, Iowa. Yeah. You know, I went by myself, like, but it wasn't by myself. I was with myself. Mm-hmm. Get what I'm saying? And I just took time to get to know me. And while I was getting to know me and loving on me, all of a sudden out of nowhere, here come this man. I'm like, oh, I ain't think about you. I'm loving on me right now. But here we are. Mary with our little tots. So, but I had to get to a place where, you know, I started loving on me correctly, you know? So
That's, you know, that's really hard to do. Even for some, okay, when I think of loving myself, I think of treating myself properly. I think of, as you say, giving myself attention, taking time off for myself. I think the problem arises when we get these thoughts in our heads, like, well, who are you to be taking care of yourself like this? Or why do you think you deserve this? Or you start thinking about the past.
Mm-hmm.
So-and-so did this to you, blah, blah, blah. And oh my God, I can't believe. And you kind of, you just get sucked into it. Almost like
you're
going to this trance of just living in the past and not really appreciating the present moment. I think that's what discourages a lot of people from like pursuing the whole love yourself, is because they get trapped in all the thoughts.
So back to what you just said about living in the moment. Mm-hmm. Living in the moment is so important, the power of now. And I did read the book, you know.
Yes.
Yes. So with the power of now and just being in the present, you know, feeling your chest rising and falling. Like when you start to have those, you know, bad thoughts and things from the past and just letting go, even like when it comes to forgiving other people or forgiving yourself for some bad things that you did, I would find myself like about to walk into Dollar Tree and something would come back and I'd feel mad. And it was like, no, stop. And I would take a breath and I'd be like, I forgive, I'm gonna say myself, Sheena. I release her to her highest and me to mine, you know, like just forgiving. And then after doing that, in the beginning, like whoever it was I was, you know, referring to, probably was like me trying to swallow tar, you know, at first, but it got easier and it got easier. And I was able to stay more in the present instead of going into the store. And now all these things are in my head and I'm focused. Now you end up buying all this stuff between you and the store for, you know, because you swirl around your head somewhere. I was able to stay focused on what it is I was trying to do and being in the present and not in my head.
Exactly. You know, that's don't go shopping when you're hungry and don't go shopping when you're angry. Yes. You end up all the stuff. I love, okay, you know, there's a writing exercise that I love to use when I'm feeling some animosity towards someone. I write them a letter. I don't send it to them though. I just write I just don't hold back on what I'm feeling. And then I'll write myself a letter. A forgiveness, like I forgive you for harboring these horrible thoughts and feelings about this person. I forgive you for staying in this relationship longer than you should have stayed. And that is a very liberating and freeing exercise. And after I've written both those letters, especially the letter of forgiveness, I feel lighter.
Yes.
You know what sometimes I'll do, Shayna? I'll sit in a specific chair as I write. And when I'm finished writing, I'll step away from that chair and just leave all that energy there and figure out what to do with it later. Because it's really just like this release of energy also.
Mm-hmm. And that's why sometimes they'll say, like with those things, they'll say to burn them. Of course, in a safe place, don't burn your house down.
I've done that before. I did that before. Fire alarm went off. It was not good. But if you have like an outdoor thing. But that's a great
thing. So the other thing that, like what you said, like maybe somebody might not be at the point in their writing where they're ready to write a full letter. In my journal, that's where I put the brain dump exercise here. So I call it brain dump. And like you in this box, you'll just write down like all your negative feelings that you're feeling. If it's shame or anger or anxiety or resentment or bitterness or whatever, just put it down. Like, dump that. So like in the journal, it's like a 90 days. So it's like every, I think that's the third Friday or the third Thursday of the month, like activity that I have, but the brain dump where you just take this time and you express the negative things that you're feeling and let it go.
I was talking with, the guest that I posted this week, she was talking about how when she was a kid, she learned that in writing, she could write down her unspoken and unwelcome thoughts.
Yes.
And just how healing that was to be able to put that down in a private space in the journal. She's like, I knew that a journal was this private space where I could just release all of those feelings, the shame, the guilt. Yeah, that's great. So I want to talk about your dad because it's so touching. It seems like he was just this powerful, loving force in your life. Can you tell us about how much of an influence he had on your writing?
He had a big influence on my writing. In the beginning, it was probably just because I was mad with him because he wanted the best for me. So he was a little hard, but I was mad with him. So I would like just write the stuff down because it was a safe space for me to not be disrespectful.
That's great. Yeah. That makes sense.
They had got me the little diary thing, like where you could lock it or something.
Oh my gosh, my father got me the same thing when I was 11. That's so funny.
So I had that little password, little journal thing, and I would, you know, write down my thoughts. But my father really encouraged me to, one, be the best like that I could be. But two, when it comes to speak and share my writings, he really, really helped me with those exercises. And, you know, like we can do probably a poem later so you can like get the whole vibe. But my dad, he was good. You know, he was really good. And let's see, probably in a later book, I'll talk a little bit more about him, because when I was in high school, he was diagnosed again with a type of cancer, and he thought that he wasn't going to live to see me graduate high school. Mm. So of course his love and his connection got a little bit stronger then. And then he made it, you know, past that. And then I thought I was grown, and then I, you know, wanted to be mad at him, and I got my own space. But it was after I got my own space that our relationship really, really got stronger, you know, because what I learned as an adult with him was I would tell him, Dad, we don't get along because we the same person.
That's so true, Shayna. That happens all the time with kids and their parents. You're like each other.
But once I had my own space and I was able to like have like healthy distance, now I found myself over there a lot, and we would hang out, and you know, he taught me like how to drive my very, he had me drive like for my first trip, because we had family in Virginia. So he would have me drive like from Philadelphia to Virginia. And I learned how to parallel park on his Chevy Silverado with an 8-foot bed. Like, that's what I learned at 16 to parallel park with. He said, you could drive this, you could drive anything. So he was more of like the person that like would push me out of the box and push me out of the comfort zone, where my mom was more of a, you got to play it safe type of person. So without my dad's balance, you know, like, get out, go do this, just go. She all right, go on, let her go.
Right.
When I was 18, I took my trip. I went to Florida. My mom was all nervous. My dad was like, let her go, let her go, let her do it. She all right. We raised her right. She all right. So my dad, yeah, he was more of, like, get out the box, push the envelope.
Yeah, that's,
you know, speak up.
And I love that, because you know, a lot of African American young ladies don't have the father that's there to do like your father, like step outside the box, be yourself. You got this. You know? And I just love how you talk about him in your book, with like you can really tell that you loved him, and there was such tenderness there, and.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing
with that. Yeah.
You mentioned you might do a poem for us.
Yeah. Sure. Why not?
This is the perfect time. Let's what are you gonna do?
So let's see. What do we want to do? You want to do Barbie? Since we talked about Barbie.
Yes, Barbie.
Barbie, perfectly plastic. Barbie, girl, you look so fantastic with your mid-drift high heels and short skirts. Barbie, how much are you worth? Huh? Oh, baby, you got traded. Paper for plastic. Barbie, all that wax, you can have it. With your fake mask, nose, eyes, and breast. Got little girls stuffing training bras. Looking for a toy chest? Playboy, Maxim, Penthouse, King. These are the Barbies young girls try to be. We need to change the mentality that our sexuality is only sensuality. Open up our eyes and come to the reality that baby, you are an original, not a copy. Silicone, plastic, Botox bodies, lipo injections, everybody circumventing being an individual. Y'all would rather be someone else's invention. Barbie, you's a bad chick. You's a 5-star chick. Is it no longer degrading because he added a prefix? Dime chick, fly chick, ride or die chick. Are all those names acceptable? Is that joke a hood rich? Now, I was raised knowing I was a queen. I didn't know it entailed showing my tail on the screen. Society really twisted our point of view, made us think to be loved. A rich hitter, we got a screw. And after they're done, they move on to the next one. Looking for a new Barbie. Guess you malfunctioned. Oh well. It starts again. X-rated pictures on Instagram and Twitter. Chicks becoming bitter saying, ain't no real men. All jokers is quitters. Baby, listen to what you said. Jokers instead of men. There's a difference. Boys only pretend. Jokers say they love you, but always leaving you alone. Making you their appetizer. When they got their entree at home. Yet you showing off your body for a little attention from a tall boy. May I make a suggestion? Realize you and your body are a temple. Make sure he comes correct. Credentials are essential. And be sure that he's fulfilling his fullest potential. Potential to be exceptional. Able to see past a two-dimensional. Only a real man can know how to love, so why sell yourself short and settle for a scrub? You have the power to turn a boy into a man, but you have to know your worth and make your demands. Every king needs a queen. Look at the Obamas. You deserve to be more than just some baby mama. Women were created from a man's rib. You are to stand by his side. You're more than just bear his kids. So take control of the power you were given. Pinocchio became a real boy. Barbies, it's time to become real women.
I love it. You know, you speak at high schools?
Yes.
Do you do that poem at high schools?
I had it in 2020, but yes.
That would be a great poem to recite at a high school gathering. Oh my gosh, that's so powerful. I love it.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, in 2021, as, you know, things get back and our society starts to be able to do more things, I'm looking forward to, you know, traveling the country and going to different high schools and, you know, helping out kids and things like that, because I feel as though that we need to start early. You know, we need to, the earlier you can start, the better it is we can catch them and hoping of changing their trajectory from what the society has planned for them, you know?
Exactly. You know what? I think it might even be more appropriate, even though a little scarier, to start in middle school.
Like in eighth grade. Yeah,
that's where the real stuff really starts to formulate in middle school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, it like that is like maybe a little like scary per se, but unfortunately, we need to have these conversations, because if we're not having these conversations with our youth in a healthy, safe type of environment, they're just going to find it out in a bad, negative environment, unfortunately. And then here we go with some of the, you know, more difficult poems in my book, like The Fall or like Black and Blue and things like that. So.
Oh, I love this. And I could just, like even doing workshops with them, writing workshops. Mm-hmm. That's going to be so powerful.
Yeah.
I'm excited for you. Shayna, this has been wonderful. Oh, my God. You're a fabulous guest. Do you have any last words of wisdom or encouragement for writers out there that you want to share?
Yeah. So for me, if you're on your writing journey and you're, you know, on a process of coming up with a book or starting a blog or anything like that, my advice is to just get started. You know, the first thing you come out with, it might not be, you know, the best. It might not be Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. You know what I'm saying? But it's a start.
Oh my gosh, that's a high bar, your first.
But I'm saying sometimes we hinder ourselves with what we want to put out there because we think we're going to come out
with the
next
great American novel,
Harry Potter. Like, wait,
yeah.
It's okay if it's not Harry Potter. It's okay if it's not Romeo and Juliet. Just get started. That's what I have. Get started. Start where you are.
Beautiful, beautiful. Shayna, tell us where we can find you.
So I am on all platforms as I Am Shayna Danielle. Twitter, you have to just put I'm because they allow 15 characters. And then my website is www.shaynadanielle.com. And you can find me on YouTube at Shayna Danielle TV. And I'm going to be sharing some more of my live performances and things like that there.
Exciting. Thank you so much for joining me today. This has been a very inspiring and motivating conversation. I hope that if you're listening, you got so much out of Shayna's wisdom, because she's a firecracker. A lot to share, a lot of just woo coming out of her.
Hope you feel as inspired as I did after talking with Shayna, because she is full of, she has just so much positivity emanating from her, so much strength, so much wisdom. And you could really feel her intention to inspire and uplift and encourage people. So I hope, especially if you're a writer and you're struggling with either writing or publishing or coming up with ideas or whatever it is, being consistent, that she has encouraged you or inspired you to just keep pushing forward. And please check out her website. The link is in the show notes. And make sure you also check out her daughter's book, because it is amazing. I ordered my copy a few weeks ago and it's amazing. So join me next week for another conversation with another fabulous guest. Make sure, in addition to checking out Shayna's social media, that you also check out my social media, Twitter at ebonyhaywood.com and Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. And I will see you next week. Bye-bye.